And welcome to a brand new life, to a brand new day, all the way from the wastelands of California. My name is Michael, and I look forward to once again serve you those sounds of salvation. First-time listeners, turn on, tune in, and drop out. This is a different kind of show, a place where you don't feel so alone. Let us chase away the light no matter what you at home choose to believe. I do admire you for your curiosity. Live and direct right now on the TuneIn Radio app. Search End of Days, and you'll find the 24/7 network, or go to michaeldeacon.com for your choice of platform. Once again, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for allowing me into your hearts and into your minds. Here we are again on a night like this. Joining me tonight is Mr. Marshall Masters. Marshall is a former CNN science features news producer, freelance writer, television analyst, and the publisher of YaoUSA.com. Since 1999, he has been researching Earth changes and Nibiru flyby-related topics, including sustainable survival communities, catastrophic crop circles, impact events, and future technologies. Like many others, Marshall sees a dark cloud coming. What makes him different is that he also sees a silver lining, a noble and inspiring Star Trek future. Josie Varga is here for the second half of the program, and we will be discussing all things from the other side. What is the meaning of life? Why are we here? What happens when we die? And what if death is not the end, but a new beginning? These are questions mankind has pondered since the dawn of time. Now, without further ado, let's bring in Mr. Masters. He is currently on hold right now. Let's bring him in. Marshall, are you there?
I'm here.
Amazing. Thank you for being here and spending some of your time with all of us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back, Michael. I always have a good time with you, and I love your audience.
Clockwise, this is always a very fun time. It's always very magical when I have you on here. It's a top talent sort of bond we have between each other.
I like that. That's good.
I know. I thought that was pretty clever.
Can I plagiarize you?
You could take that one with you.
Okay, good.
For sure, Marshall, but this is amazing. Every time I have you on here, the episodes are always just so impactful. I get so many different responses, mostly good, of course.
Good.
The ones that are negative are, the ones that are negative are usually about me.
Well, you know, some days you eat the bear and some days the bear eats you.
Correct. You can't always please everyone, and that's why I like this platform that I present to everyone out there, that this is a very open and safe discussion. Anything I say, you can disagree with, totally fine.
Yeah, and I like the way you handle it, and it's the proper way to handle it. How are we going to understand the world around us if we're busy, you know, slapping duct tape on other people's mouths?
That's not the way. And Marshall, before we really get into things, can you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself before we dig deeper through all the dark matter we have to get through tonight?
Dark matter, I like that. I am the publisher of YOWUSA.com, Yowza.com. You can also get there through MarshallMasters.com. Since 1999, I've been following Earth threats and Planet X. It's been a big topic for me since 2003. The three precepts, what's important to me as an author and helping people, being in service to others, is first, self-sufficiency knowledge. Second, hope for the future. And third, knowing you're not alone. And something that's a real critical part of my mission, because there are a lot of people who are in awareness about things that are coming, and many times they come to this awareness through dreams, visions, and premonitions. And when they go to share these experiences with others, and they're horribly, terribly mocked and ridiculed, and they feel isolated and alone. And I think my greatest passion in my work is just to comfort these people, that they know they're not alone, because I see them. I see them every day. There are a lot of them out there. They just can't see each other because they're so separated. But there are a lot of them out there. So that's me.
Yes, and of course, we already have talked how you worked for CNN, who I refer as the children of the lie.
With CNN, I kind of agree with Larry King. It's the Cartoon News Network now. It's sure not the network that when I was there in the 80s and I was working with CNN in the science department, and this was when they were making their bones. And they were a lean, mean news machine, and it was the most amazing thing of my life to have been associated with that. But what I see now just is the standards of journalism and ethical journalism. Well, it's just pretty much disappeared in terms of cable. You know, it's gone. And it's really sad. Sometimes I almost want to take CNN off my resume now. I'm so embarrassed.
I understand, but this is always something that always gets brought to my attention by the outside. They say, oh, Marshall, he worked for CNN. That means X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, it's going to mean X, Y, and Z. That's the problem.
That's the today. Problem.
That is what CNN has reduced itself is to something that means something. You know, it's not, they're just not a real news organization anymore. And for me, like I said, when I was there, it was a lean, mean news machine. It was just an amazing time in my life. I used to, when I'd go to Atlanta to work on story packages with my producer, sometimes, remember when CNN in those days, they had the big newsroom behind the glass and they were shooting that as the background.
Oh yeah.
Those that can remember. Well, I was in that room from time to time, and to be honest with you, I always had a little bit of trepidation about that because the tension in that room was so thick you could cut it with a knife. These were people looking for good, hard news stories. And I just, you know, I'd go out of there and I just get it. Your muscles would just start cramping up because there was so much tension.
Right. And that's why, Marshall, I bring this up because it seems like you're not one to be a part of that sort of group because all the tension and all the hostility going on, it makes me wonder, how did you survive during that sort of cutthroat business?
Oh, I loved it.
You
I was
loved
in
it,
my
though.
Element. And I was having a ball.
So you were in your prime.
I was doing, universities and colleges in Texas. That was my beat. And so I was out doing news stories. They don't do that. I did 3-minute news features and, we did all kinds of amazing things. And, the standards of journalism were just so brilliant. I have a degree. In communications. And so it was a chance for me to follow my college career path. Although I went from that into computers, because if you're in media somewhere along the line, you either get incredibly nihilistic and greedy or you go somewhere else to pay the mortgage.
Understood. Yeah. That about it sums it up right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, I just didn't want to go. It just wasn't my character. In me to do that. So I, got into the computer business and
never looked
back.
But
it was still, that was when Ted Turner was running it. And, he was a taskmaster, but he was a good taskmaster. He was a very, very brilliant man.
I wonder what Ted's up to nowadays.
I don't know. What I would want to know is he's still watching the network he founded.
Oh, I know. Great question.
Yeah, you know, I can't, it's painful. I can't turn it on.
Well, I mean, that goes for almost every other media source we have today.
Yeah, you know, there's one media channel that's starting to get news channel, One America News, and they're on DirecTV, and they actually do news. Who'd have thunk it? That's nice. So maybe we're going to get some competition. Maybe there's enough people out there going, you know, I'm tired of propaganda channels. Give me real news.
Yeah, well, that's what we definitely are forced to see every day on a daily basis. But on a side note, Marshall, there were all sorts of craziness going on out there at the Sunspot Solar Observatory out in New Mexico. I'm not quite sure if you were following that story at all.
Yeah, I followed it.
What was that all about?
Well, right now, it's about speculation. last, when the story broke, and I mean, when there's a big story that breaks like that, I know because my email box just like, boom, huge electronic accordion.
Yeah.
And, that one was, oh my gosh. And, we looked at the story. The two things that got my attention, and the big thing that got my attention was closing the post office.
Yeah, I saw that.
Closing the observatory, difficult, but closing the post office, because I've been watching how the elites manipulate information over the years. And this was, when they closed the post office, that has leaker written all over it, you know, in big letters.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Apparently the FBI was alarmed when they detected some sort of IP address linked to child CP. I don't even want to say it because I'm that disgusted about it. It's just ridiculous. But then again, yeah, but hear me out. I don't exactly know if that is some sort of cover-up story. This is some sort of proverbial smokescreen.
Yeah, you know, I would have been more likely if they said, yeah, he had, somebody was, watching, Playboy for Married Men.
Right. It makes really no sense at all.
That's right. It's like Playboy for Married Men. Same pictures every month.
I'm perturbed by this. It's just very unusual, especially since I don't recall black helicopters racing over during Chris Hansen's To Catch a Predator. Now, do you?
Well, what's happening is this was, when you see how the elites manipulate information, this was a very clumsy, cover up. It was a very strong initial reaction, closing observatories. As far as it goes for the videos that I've seen show up, I looked at those in my mind. Frankly, it's not a natural object. So, I mean, there are people saying it's Planet X and it's this and it's that. And I go, no, I looked at it. It's, there's no Terminator halo, movements unnatural. I think there is a good likelihood, because one of the things the elites will do is, the first rule of controlling spin is the first one to spin. You don't want to wait for somebody to do something. You want to get ahead of it. So what they could have done is actually manufactured these videos that have been leaked out to the internet by the same people who are doing the cover-up. And that, in conjunction with all the other nonsense, is going to leave everybody with what they have, which is speculation.
Right.
That's all it is. Right now, it's speculation. And do I think there is a cover-up? Of course there's a cover-up. You wouldn't have all of this nonsense going on.
There's something more to it, that's for sure.
Yeah, but for me, it's, I look at it and say, you know, the first fear you have, really, on something like this is you say, well, okay, so I go into it and I start digging into it. And what if I, without me, I even knowing it, I find a backdoor to what's really happening somewhere or something that would explain it partially? If I do that, what's my reward? Well, I'm just going to be another voice in a whole bunch of conspiracy chatter.
Right.
But in the meantime, the guys that are doing it are going to go, hey, he's smelling the smoke here, and they'll drop the hammer on me. And next thing I know, you know, I've got all kinds of grief coming at me from another point in my life. So with something like this, it's just not, we can't do good science. All we can do is speculate. And, there's enough speculation as it is. So I just really wasn't interested in following on it.
Understood. And I don't blame you. I mean, if someone got angry with you, Marshall, they could just dig up through, say, your high school past and start testing your moral character all of a sudden.
I feel sorry for Kavanaugh and his family.
Don't you? I mean, all right, let's just say it. Maybe perhaps he kind of did something that's sort of along the lines of being a scumbag. Let's say that. However,
no, I wouldn't say there's nothing consistent here.
Marshall,
I'm a science-driven guy. I look for the facts. I'm not even gonna, I'm not even gonna go with that kind of, well, imagine if you will.
It was just a joke, Marshall. Yes.
There's nothing here. This is a political setup.
Of course.
And that's it. And I'm a registered independent. All right. Matter of fact, my motto is a pox on everyone's houses. The two-party system is a total freaking failure.
You sound like me now, but yeah, the two-party system tearing through America year after year. But what I was saying is we've all done something kind of bad in the past. Not all of us are these angels and saints. I mean, I'm sure someone could say something about you growing up and label you a certain way. And then now your job is on the line 30 some years later.
Yeah. And this is, there's no, I mean, what I'm seeing is where's due process? Where's the assumption of innocence? Where is there a respect for the dignity of human life? Why was this dragged out? They know about this woman back in July.
Right.
They sit on the information until they stick it up their sleeve like an ace. And then it's purely obviously a political ploy that's going on.
Politically motivated, no doubt.
Yeah. And so it goes on that way, but it's all part and parcel of the distraction. In the meantime, lives are being ruined. This is, you know, this again is all distraction for me. I don't really pay that much attention to the distraction. I'm always focusing on what's happening with Earth changes, what's happening to the planet.
And I get that for sure, Marshall.
That's the core.
No doubt.
That's what we have to do.
I'm with you on that. However, the fact that politics seems to rear its ugly head into everything, it's just outstanding and amazing that everything has to do with politics one way or another. And we're seeing it every day. I talk about this on the program every now and then randomly, how there really is a war on masculinity here in America, as well as the feminine energy is very unbalanced. Not just not the feminine energy only, but the male energy as well. There's a big unbalance going on right now in America, and we're seeing it every day. What we're talking about is just that, the lack of moral character that we see on all fronts just presents itself time and time, over and over again, Marshall. It's just one endless cycle.
Well, it is. And it's also setting us up to fail. It's part of setting us up to fail, dividing us. I am always looking at what are the long-term consequences. I tend to, in my work, I am looking years ahead of my audience. So my audience is here in 2018, but I'm sitting out there probably about 2022 right now in my thinking and beyond. So I'm always projecting into the future and trending because I'm a trend guy. I want to see how things are going to progress out over time. And what I'm seeing now is there is a tremendous amount of distraction. And someone once told me, and I thought it was a very interesting concept, that the whole thing with Clinton versus Trump is two competing Anunnaki bloodlines fighting to see who's going to get control of the planet after the Anunnaki leave.
Well, that's a pretty good, good wrap up of what's going on.
It's the only thing that explains it.
Everything it almost does.
Like, are you crazy? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, that's why it's good not to completely buy into anything that you read or see, especially on TV. And again, this goes back to what I always say on the program about 80 to 85% of the population here in this nation are just completely brainwashed. The eyes are open, but the soul, it's just void.
They're not seeing it. And, now, for example, in this new book I've just brought out, Radio Free Earth, and it took me 2 years to write the book. Folks that are into preparedness, anything dealing with government, they kind of like, danger, Will Robinson, danger.
Yes.
And they're doing that. But in order to write this book, and what the book is for, is I wrote the book for people who think a transceiver is a sexual preference.
Oh, my.
Transceivers of two-way radio. All right. It transmits and it receives. But I wrote the book for people who think it's a sexual preference. In other words, they don't have no idea what it is, but they know during tribulation, when the grid goes down, cell phones go down, all communications go down, and it's like Katrina. The only people that were able to get communications out of the stricken areas where there was a total collapse of infrastructure were hams, who, good people, when everything hit, they threw their radios and gear and batteries and whatnot and tents into their trucks and campers and RVs, and they went down there and they set up shop and they started doing message relays. And this is what communication is going to be absolutely imperative for people during, in surviving what's going to come during the Planet X flyby, which is what I talk about. And so in the preparation of this book, I used a lot of government resources, a lot of training through FEMA and Homeland Security. And when I talk to people who are first responders and I say, yeah, here's my certifications, they go, that's impressive.
Right.
And I got a lot of the information from the book was in terms of interoperability, getting radios, different kinds of radios to work. Now, for the police, trust me, that is a nightmare. Because they're in the process of going to all these new and incredibly expensive digital radio systems. But for folks that are just going to survive a tribulation, I'm talking about with Radio Free Earth, how they can go out and use a combination of consumer and amateur radio. So GMRS, family radio service, bubble packs, CB radios, amateur radios, shortwave receivers. And what I'm doing is saying, here's all these wonderful, inexpensive resources. Here's how you can use them in a layered approach, where your first layer is your emergency layer. Your second layer is for field operations, because you're going to have folks that are going to be going out beyond your outer perimeter for any number of reasons. And then you have your command and control. So a lot of this is really based on a lot of the things that I was taught and I learned going through all of this government training. And for folks out there that are, that they kind of say, well, I'll just get a radio, put it in a box and stick it on the shelf. That's not a solution. If you're not, you don't know how to use it. If you're not proficient, on the job training is not going to work for you. So, what I wrote the book for is it's a large book. On Amazon, the black and white edition is 430 pages, something like that, and it's 8.5 by 11. I take people through everything that they understand from a broad level, all of these technologies, how to pick them, what to use them for, also dealing with electromagnetic pulse, solar storms, who are you going to contact? How are you going to share the information? Unlike people that typical preppers that have this aversion to anything government, my philosophy is when the federal government collapses, you support your local sheriffs. You want to go to your elected local officials and you want to work with them. And that's what I'm promoting in the book, because at the high federal level, think of what we're seeing right now with Department of Justice and FBI. Basically, it's like you look at the FBI and Department of Justice and you go, political police, political police. That's what they become. And that's what it looks like. They just are political police. But it's really just people at the very top who perverted the system, got into power and perverted it for their own use. But the people throughout the agencies, they're very upset. It's not who they are. It's not how they define themselves. They're in public service. So there's always a few bad apples, but they're in public service because they're in service to others.
Right.
Yeah. They want to do the right thing. And so throwing the baby out with the bathwater to me is really stupid. You want to go find people, because this is where you're going to find folks who have the knowing of things and who can quickly organize and get things going. And so it's these type of things that I teach. And, my goal with the book, I mean, as any author, I'd say if you can buy Radio Free Earth today and read it today, you're going to get the most advantage. And that's absolutely the way it is.
Right. And that's Radio Free Earth.
Radio Free Earth. That's the name of the book on Amazon.
On Amazon.
But I considered it, I wrote it more as what I call a checklist item.
Right. And it's very important that you did have this sort of material out for people out there because technology will fail.
Technology will fail. And so what I, you know, I'm saying to people is I really would love for you to get the book and read it today and get your license and get your radios and get on the air. But that's not how people work. We tend to want to buy something. We're consumers. Buy it, put it in the garage, problem solved. That's it. Okay, what's on HBO tonight?
Right.
And we go that way. So what I would say for folks is that if you are interested in preparedness in any way, this is a checklist item. You buy it, put it in the garage, and you have it. So why do you do that? Because it'd take about 2 days for somebody to sit down and read the book from scratch, but that will give them the same insight into using two-way communications that if they were to just to do the research on their own would take about 4 or 5 years.
Right. And
it compresses all of that into a 2-day read.
Amazing. So, and of course, Marshall, one day the earth will become violent and try to throw us off yet again, and waters will rise.
Yep.
Just like the Hopi predicted and many other cultures from the past predicted. And it's very interesting, Marshall. I do want to get into sort of the ancient sort of Sumerian perspective here. But before,
sure.
Yeah, but before we do, I just want to tell you that many people out there, especially the older generation out there that listen to shows like this sort of and talk about Planet X and what can and may in fact just happen, they always say, well, I'm too old to move out of the house or I'm too old to do this. What do you say to those folks, Marshall?
Well, what I can say to them is I can only speak from my own point of view. Everybody, life is, I enjoy my life. I'm enjoying it very much right now with the freedom and mobility that I have and getting a major work published and going around the country. And, I love it, but, you know, realistically, so you know, here I am, I'm a senior and I could say, I could do that. But that's not me. To me, I'm inspired by seniors that I have met over the years who are familiar with the topic and they have a passion for service to others that is truly noble and inspiring. And I've always, you know, it's funny because I've met so many of them over the years,
right?
People in their 80s and 90s and they care and they're trying to get the message out.
Mm.
They care more than the young people who are truly at risk. That's because they have the wisdom of years and they're willing to follow their instincts to it. So, for those that are going to, you know, those that are going to say, well, I'm too old. I'm too this. If it happens, I just want to be a ground zero. And to me, anybody who says, oh, well, when it happens, I just want to be a ground zero. Excuse me, but in the words of Admiral T. Kirk, double dumbass on you. Okay? Because
right.
That is just nonsense bravado. It's just nonsense bravado. It's like you're sitting here today. Well, if it's really bad, oh, blah, 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 blah. And this is how I'm just going to shut down the conversation. Yeah, well, when the wall of water is coming up the street and you're standing in the middle of the street, are you going to stand there and say, I am not going to move because I said this is how I'm going to die and I am a person of my double dumbass stupid words? Are you going to do that? Or are you going to be running upstairs kicking women and children out of the way so you can get up to the top of the landing? And that's what they're going to be doing. So people who have this bravado, now that's jerks. They're just being jerks. So there you go. That's truthfully how I see it.
Understood, especially with all the current Earth changes that we can observe today, it is telling that there really is going to be something major coming very soon.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I've been writing about Planet X for all these years. And over all these years, whenever I've seen it in images captured by other people. Never doubted the existence of it. Not once. Not after I completed my initial field of study. And actually, it was the results that came in from a NASA satellite that was in orbit, the circumpolar orbit around the sun. And that was, we were looking for that information to come in. And, of course, NASA always, every time it gets interesting, what do you know? The darn thing breaks. Who'd have thunk it? But enough information came in off the probe that we were able to verify that the sun is interacting with an object coming up from the southern skies. And it was absolutely clear. So at that point, there was no question in my mind. But on the 9th of this month, I saw it for the first time with my own two eyes.
Right. That's something you told me in the email. Go ahead, Marshall.
Yeah. It's something that, first off, if I were to file this report with me, because I do image analysis for a lot of people, I would reject it because it's a compelling eyewitness report, but there's no image documentation because it was very quick. It was right just before the sun went behind the sun, behind the horizon.
Where was this, by the way, Marshall?
This was here in Washington.
Oh, okay.
And this was near Moses, a place called Moses Lake. And we were way out on farm roads, and I was with a good friend who's helped. Actually, this was someone who helped with my book and has followed my work over the years. And she was the first one to see it. And I'm kind of just sitting there enjoying the ride and all that and out in the country. And all of a sudden she, she's just totally excited, and she's looking in her rear view mirror and her side view mirror, and I'm seeing Planet X. And then I'm like, hello, that woke me up. And she pulled off the road, and we jumped out of the – first off, I looked off to my right and through the passenger window in the front, and which was clean, and I saw it. And – actually, what I saw, I'm starting to see a lot of videos on YouTube that are coming up. Here's one of the things you have to understand about YouTube. The good stuff, the stuff I look for. You know how you find it? They don't get any traffic. Beautiful imagery, 100 views, that's it. Clickbait, fear porn, total take you down, a rat hole, garbage, thousands of views. But the good stuff is suppressed, okay?
Yeah, I understand.
That's how you find it. So my friend pulled over, and I looked out the window. Then I jumped out of the car, and this time there was no window glass between me and it, and it was still the object. And before I could get to my smartphone, the sun slipped behind the horizon, and that was, you lose it.
So you saw two suns.
I saw it. I saw it with my own eyes, and it was not, people think, oh my gosh, you must have been excited. Nope. I've never wanted to see it. I've never wanted to see it because I have always known when I see it, I know what it's bringing.
Oh, yes.
Bringing death. Bringing suffering. Dying time is near. And so I'm looking at it, and an advantage that I have as someone who does a lot of analysis is I didn't look at it and I'm going, gee, what am I looking at? What am I looking at? I do what I do as an image analyst all the time. I just put it in front of myself and objectively study it. I don't draw any conclusions. I don't think. I just use my vision to study it and record details, memorize details. And in this case, what was very compelling was looking at the different things that I look for in the type of reports that people are sending me of their observations. And so after we saw it, my partner, the lady I was with, was very excited because I was there and corroborated what she saw, and but then she also corroborated what I saw, and we saw the object just above the sun around the 12:15, 12:30 position. And when we talked about it, I will usually throw people an oddball question to test their perception. So when I looked at it, and I just asked her, I said, okay, is that between the 11 and 12, where do you put it? And she said, no, it's just after midnight on the sun, relative position, like 12:15, 12:30. And when she did that, she verified what I had observed, but then I also had a way to verify what she observed. But then again, if I were to submit this story to myself, I would have to say, thank you for a compelling observation, but we can't draw a conclusion on it without any physical, without photos. But it got me thinking, and what I really was, I wasn't sitting there thinking to myself, what's the meaning of all of this? Because frankly, I'm the guy people come to for the answers to those questions.
Right. So perhaps the universe set the sign up for you.
Yeah. Synchronicity. You got a good point.
Right.
And I really, my first thoughts about it after I saw it was, I was thinking about all of the people over the year that have sent me their photographs. And first thing I wanted to know, because I'm always sensitive to other people's feelings about this, because mockery and ridicule is terrible.
Understood, yeah, and rightfully so.
And so my first thing was, and it's a long thing. I mean, I really spent a lot of time just chewing on this. And my first post-observation thing was, had I been really fair and even-handed with the people that have been sending me all these wonderful reports over the year? Yes. Because, you know, only a small fraction, maybe 5% of them, I'll validate and I'll use for a video or I'll report it in an article.
Well, that's fair, Marshall, because you do have to discern.
Yes, discernment is important. And so, and I remembered there was times I could be a little testy. Somebody would send me a photograph and say, my brother took this picture last year in Hawaii. What do you think it is? And I'd write back and I'd say, you know, it looks like a picture your brother took in Hawaii last year.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, where's the provenance? All right. And this is a hearsay report. So it's useless to me. Compelling imagery, but it's a useless report. But in most cases, you know, when people send me stuff, I just would explain to them, If I would say, yeah, it's, you got it, you saw it, or, well, you didn't, but I would just explain why. I wouldn't get into anything judgmental or whatever. And I would always encourage them to keep trying, and that have observed it and have had what I've deemed to be a credible observation. And, I tell them, what do you think their response typically is?
Probably some sort of backlash.
Well, just, you know, give it a good old guesstimate. How do you think they're going to respond to? Yeah, you observed it. You got a good observation. We're going to verify this. How do you think they respond in most cases?
I would have to say they're very aggressive.
Okay. Well, that would be, a good guess, but it's not how it works.
Really?
I'll tell you how it works. When I write them and I say, your image of Planet X, your object of interest observation is verified. You got it. And it's like telling these people, yoo-hoo! Woo-hoo! Congratulations! You came back positive for cancer.
Yes.
I mean, they don't really, when they sent it to me, they knew they had something good. But what they were really hoping for was for me to shoot it down. And so every time I've told people, the few that I have, that, yeah, it's the real deal. You got it. There's no joy, no celebration. There's sadness because they were really hoping, you know, that it would be some way for me to explain it away, that they could sleep, you know, that they could go to sleep with and put their heads down at night and go, yeah, okay. Yeah, he worked it out.
Well, it is a very troubling notion to understand that the ancients saw something that might potentially happen that would impact the entire universe.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
I mean, this is something that it's coming through, and, but Planet X is going to, you can look at Planet X and the approach of Planet X as being something that is a terrible cataclysm, and it will be that. But I don't see it that way. I see it as the huge cosmic Control-Alt-Delete.
I like that.
In other words, we're going to do a hard reset.
Like a big reset button, yes.
Yeah, and because what will happen is that when this comes through, the devastation is going to take a great deal of life, yes. But at the same time, it is going to destroy a lot of, if not all of the surface infrastructure that the elites use to control us, which means we're going to be footloose and fancy free. So yeah, we will go through a phase where we are dying in vast numbers, but we will be dying as free men and women in vast numbers. The question will be is whoever survives all of this, what they're going to do to ensure their freedom. And for me, that was a big impulse to write Radio Free Earth. Because the most important thing is people need to know three things. Now, self-sufficiency, knowledge, hope for the future, and knowing they're not alone. So with two-way radios, you can share a tremendous information. Keep in mind, we're not having any more where we've heard all of the stories about really brilliant people who have invented something, and then they file for their patents. The next thing they know, government goons are smashing through the door, wrecking everything, tearing their lives apart because some special interest has told the government, hey, you know, send the goons, and our government, sure, we'll be happy to do that. And the goons go out there and destroy people's lives.
That's what happens, yes.
But during the tribulation, they're not going to be the goons, which means we're going to have Nikola Teslas, Louis Pasteurs. We're going to have all kinds of brilliant men and women all across the country coming up with wonderful inventive ideas that are going to help people become self-sufficient. And you got to get the word out. And if you got two-way radios, you're going to get the word out, and it's going to help people. And the fact that we can do that is going to help folks have hope for the future, that we're just not all isolated and getting picked off one at a time, but that we can reach out and connect with each other. And therein is the most important thing of all, knowing you're not alone. And so to me, when the infrastructure collapses, and what folks have to understand is that some time ago, the United States government funded the formation of a special group to study EMP, electromagnetic pulse.
Yep.
And, the results of that study was that they said there is a way to harden the grid for about $3 to $4 billion to protect against EMP attacks. And, we need to do this. Well, no sooner this came out than, the energy industry said, hell no. The number one, the biggest chunk of money on K Street for lobbyists right now is going to prevent the grid from happening. And you have energy companies that go, when we die, we want the children to die. That's their message. You got a child out there that is dependent on pharma, dependent on drugs, dependent on technology, your loved ones who are dependent on technology, the grid goes down, they die.
It's
over.
We don't
care. We want them to die because after we die, we don't care about you. So we want your children, your loved ones, we want them all to die along with us. Misery loves company. That's how the energy industry is responding, because if they let the government come in and implement this strategy of EMP protection, they're no longer going to be a self-regulated industry. So they would much rather regulate us to death, literally, not figuratively, than to have the government come in and protect the people. And so I look at all of this insane nonsense that's going on right now politically, and I'm going, you know, what about the grid? What about the grid? You know, and for people who think it's ridiculous, go get the book One Second After and read it. It's a trilogy. It's a phenomenal trilogy. I'd read the whole thing. And this is an important thing that we have to be able to pick ourselves up from the ground and move forward and continue on. But I have hope in us that we will do it. And the first step is people have to be able to communicate. So that's why I did this book. Yes. It's for anybody. You can go out. You don't have to have any licenses or whatever to buy amateur.
Uh-oh, did I lose you, Marshall? We might have lost Marshall. Marshall, are you alive?
We're here.
We got.
I don't have him. We just got dropped.
We got booted off.
Yeah.
Well, that happens. That's a very normal thing. But here we are again, together again, like a very happy, dysfunctional family, as I like to say.
Normal again.
Yes. So, Marshall, I do want to get into some of the earlier roots of some of your understanding and, of course, back to human origin. I know we talked about this before, mm-hmm. but yes, of course, in terms of human origin creation, would you say that the Sumerians knew most or some of the truth?
Well, I think there's one book by Zachariah Sitchin. If you read any of his books, all of his books are brilliant. I had the pleasure of knowing the man, working with him briefly. Fastidious, dotted his I's, crossed his T's. I stand on his shoulders as a Planet X researcher. And there's others as well. Carlos Munoz Ferrada and so forth. And there's a book. It's The Lost Book of Enki. And The Lost Book of Enki, I think came out in 2003, is actually the autobiography of Enki. And Enki is the Anunnaki leader here on Earth who actually was responsible for our inception as a species. And we were a synthesis of early hominid genes and Anunnaki genes. And this was something where we literally came from his loins. It wasn't, one of these all-inspiring moments. The way it's written in the book, Enki is walking along a riverbank and he sees a couple of Earth girls that are really good looking and goes woo woo, you know, and, next thing, va va voom, here's humanity and here we are.
Right.
I would say, for anyone who's ever experienced gold fever, it's not a long stretch to say we're Von Anaki bloodline because we were bred to mine gold. So why else? There's other things that by the gram are worth a lot more than gold. And yet we don't, those things we just like, well, that's interesting. Gold, all of a sudden we get crazy and we do crazy things.
It really, yeah, that it's really, really strange once we look into our own obsession with gold and how we actually use it for a lot of things, things on your cell phone, the satellites in space, with crystals right. as well, et cetera. You know how that goes. It's very amazing if you think about it.
Well, gold is important. If you, what's coming, the Anunnaki, as the Planet X system is actually a system. It's a, what's called a mini constellation. It's a brown dwarf star, a companion to our sun. And it has planets and moons in orbit around it. And so I call it the Planet X system. Yeah. The core is Nemesis. And then in my book, Surviving the Planet X Tribulation, I talk about the other bodies, which are Helion, Arbota, then Nibiru is the outermost major planet. And this is what's coming this way. And I discuss it. My largest discussion of what that is going to be is in my book, Being in It for the Species. And there I really talk a lot about what they're coming back for and what we have to do to deal with it. They're coming for women, for slave breeding programs, and they're coming for gold, but not for monetary incentive. I mean, they use gold to repair their atmosphere. When the Planet X system comes passing through our system, their atmosphere is greatly perturbed, and it suffers a lot of destruction. And
right.
So their way of dealing with it is that they found that you use gold and you put it up there. And, you know, if you think about it, you look at our satellites, they have that thin gold foil.
They got gold and crystals, yeah.
That's right. And the thing about the gold is it's very good at blocking radiation. So that's what it's all about. If you see a cockpit on an F-16 jet, it has that nice goldish tint to it because with that particular aircraft, pilots are heavily exposed to UV. And so what they do is they actually, in the cockpit, in the plexiglass that's
right.
used in the cockpit, they embed within that a gold talcum.
Yeah.
So the gold, that's the reason why you get the goldish tint off of the F-16s. And you'll see that in certain types of airplanes where they have these, this ability to have a lot of high visibility. So they're coming for gold.
It's really something that's, it's really something that the Sumerians knew so much.
Well, they did, and the Sumerians were the first, before the Sumerians, and it really does support the story, because before the Sumerians, we were hunter-gatherers. All of a sudden, here comes the Sumerians, and they have, a written language,
They were advanced,
all kinds of technology.
Yeah, a very advanced civilization.
Very advanced civilization that comes to it, so... we have a long history of dealing with it, and granted, it's a very unsettling thing for people to consider that is what the translation of the Sumerian text by Sitchin, if it's really right, there are no such things as extraterrestrials because we are ETs as well.
Correct. And of course, Zachariah Sitchin still lives on, his name deeply embedded with the ancient astronaut theory. And I'm still amazed that the TV show, after all these years, is still going strong. Eric von Daniken has certainly picked up the proverbial ball and kept it moving along the same lines as a Giorgio Tsoukalos, who for sure has picked up the ball and ran with the opportunity given to him.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Marshall, have you made an appearance on the program?
Which program? That would be
Ancient Astronauts. Have you?
Ancient Astronauts? No,
never. Wow. Why not? I mean, I think you're someone who rightfully deserves such platform to speak on this sort of subject.
Well, sometimes I think I'm just a little too serious.
I see.
It's hard for them to paint me with a tinfoil hat because I'm a science-driven guy. So I'm always coming back to the science of it and makes it unsettling. But I've been on Discover, National Geographic.
Yeah, you've been on TV.
I've been on several of the TV shows. And I can remember when they were – History Channel was starting with the prepper shows.
Right.
And, God, I had so many producers contacting me. I didn't want any part of it because it was just a farce. And, the first rule of preparedness is don't tell people where your stuff is.
Right.
And these idiots are, getting, and so finally, after telling these producers, no, thank you, no, thank you, no, thank you. Finally, one of them called and I said, gave me the pitch and would you like to do it? And I said, I do not want to wear a hula skirt in front of your cameras and scratch myself for the benefit of your advertisers. They left me alone after that.
Understood. Probably not the answer they were in search of.
Yeah, but it was the answer that worked for me. I didn't want any part of it.
I hear you.
That kind of money is tainted.
Well, you might be right about that. According to what I've heard in the past, well, we won't mention names, but I think you might be right.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, and by the way, there's another name I did want to get your opinion on, and that is one Elon Musk. You were mentioning individuals out there who are brilliant, and Elon is one of those who I think is actually someone very intelligent, but hasn't really made the right choices, in my opinion. How do you feel about SpaceX and all the trouble that's currently going on with him and his whole motivation to go to Mars?
Well, Elon Musk is, we can look at it in one of two ways. We can look at it with a whole lot of controversy around Elon Musk. But then what we can say is, no matter what you think of the guy, look what he set in motion. And I tend to want to do that. I want to say, well, what's in motion? Because Elon Musk, and he does have this unique ability to shoot himself in the foot.
That's true. I really do like him, though.
Yeah. And it's, he's probably under a lot of pressure doing what he's doing, to be driven to be successful. But in the final analysis, take Elon Musk out of the matrix. Okay. Let's take him out of the conversation.
Yeah.
And by just simply saying, a reentry vehicle, fell on his bunker and he bought the farm. Okay. So that's how he goes. One of his own rockets falls on him. What happens to SpaceX? SpaceX will continue. SpaceX already has a life of its own. And I think.
Word.
Yeah. It'll keep on going. And then over time, he'll have his idiosyncrasies. You know, if you study the life of Nikola Tesla, Tesla had a whole lot of idiosyncrasies. And in the final analysis, though, who are particularly millennials enamored with, Edison or Tesla? And it's Tesla. Because
no doubt.
Tesla was in it for the species. He wanted to help people. His first passion was service to others. Edison's first passion was Edison. And Edison did a lot to destroy and suppress Tesla. Did a lot. He was very threatened by Tesla.
Oh, yeah.
Because Tesla was very good at just, you know, wanting to do something that would change the world for the benefit of the common man. And that just didn't work well from a capitalistic point of view, shall we say.
Yeah, it didn't sit well with him. And it's the same way how you were talking about how if you do something and want to mass produce it for the better, that's when the alphabet boys come to your door and take your project away.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Not only do they take your project away, but they will make point of destroying your life so that you'll never fully recover. You will spend the rest of your life trying to overcome what is a horrific and terrible injustice.
Amazing.
And that is what happens. And I feel my heart goes out to these people. And yeah, the thing that we have to keep in mind, because we're always being painted these dark visions of the future. Now, yeah. For example, we were talking about EMP. The government study found that if the grid collapses, 9 out of 10 Americans will die. Period. This is science. Analysis that was funded and paid for by the government, and no one's refuted it. This came out during the Obama administration. Obama's response to it was to try and get these people defunded because it wasn't matching the narrative he wanted to have. He didn't want to have a narrative of what was in that book, One Second After, which is actually North Korea and Iran collaborate, launch 2 medium ballistic missiles with EMP warheads from container ships offshore. And these 2 go high up, boom, fry the nation's grid, 9 out of 10 Americans are dead. Hello, thank you. And this is, it's not a hypothetical. They've done the math. They've worked it out. This is a real threat. So we're going to have a lot of people that are going to die. The number one cause of death will be denial. That's the number one cause of death. Number 2 cause of death will be location. And the number 3 will be disease following the initial events, because we have been, as a culture, we have been set up to fail. You look at GMO food, processed foods. These foods, we don't really understand the negative impact of them because we consume them along with fresh fruits and vegetables and meats and so forth. But if you were to just live off of Chef Boyardee, all right, you know, or GMO pasta, processed GMO sauce, all that kind of stuff, within 2 weeks, your lower bowel is shot, which means your digestion is gone. You're going to be going between diarrhea to constipation. The good flora in your gut is gone, and that's where 70% or more of your immune system is. And so I see pictures of these people, and they got stacks and stacks of Kraft macaroni and cheese, and they think they're smart. It's death food. That's what they're doing. You see these, over the years, I've asked people who talk about, oh, I've got a year's supply of food and all that. And I said, did you bother to try seeing if you could live off of that exclusively for 2 weeks?
Good question. Yeah.
Nobody said no. Didn't think the need. Yeah. Well, try it. I did. I had a 1 year supply of food. I spent 2 weeks, destroyed my health, and I wouldn't even give it away to charity. I took the whole thing and threw it in the dumpsters. And, cause I didn't even want to give that food away.
I don't blame you.
All right. So we're set up to fail. Our immune systems are compromised.
We are born to die, as they say.
We're born to die. Yeah. We're really made to die. But again, looking to hope for the future, yes, this is going to cause, for those that don't die with the initial events, which will be principally those living along major coastlines, near volcanoes.
Myself included.
Plants. Where are you at? Let's see.
I'm in El Centro, California, about 10 miles or so from the Salton Sea. We all know the disaster that happened there.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there. Well, if I were you,
I need to get out of here.
Caldera would be real, real bothersome to me.
I can't stay below sea level out here if I'm going to survive.
No, you're not. El Centro is
a death trap.
It's a death trap because it'll be an inland ocean again. Mm-hmm. The whole Central California is the food basket of the U.S. People don't realize how much produce comes out of there. It's
so
all
much.
An inland sea.
Yeah.
And when they were able to start irrigating, bringing in water from other sources, the soil was just phenomenally rich. And that's the reason why that area is so good. But, we have the big one hits and the San Andrea and Cascadia and these things happen. Boom,
Like 90 going north.
Yeah, that's it. If you're in El Centro, maybe the motto will be, how long can you tread water?
Yeah, my goodness. Got to get out of here. And, of course, one of my other questions I did want to ask in regards of SpaceX and all that noise is eventually space tourism will be something coming in the very near future. Elon Musk ultimately wants to create this sort of elaborate trip around the moon. My question to you, Marshall, is if you actually had the wealth to afford such a trip, would you take that trip?
Hell yeah.
You would? I'm scared as hell of heights.
I sure would.
Oh my, you would do it.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
I would do it if I could do it.
You're brave.
I'm a born hard geek, man.
Oh man, you are very brave. I don't think I could do it. I'm so frightened of heights at times. I would need to be sedated to actually do it.
Yeah, well, that would be good.
Get a couple of drinks in me.
Food and ganja,
Well, that would work. I would definitely take the trip if I would get a little inebriated during the trip. That would actually help me overcome my fear of the heights.
Well, I'm sure they would have some way of dealing with that.
No doubt. I really do hope so. And, of course, Marshall, there was another more serious story that came out recently about Saturn. They detected dust storms on Titan, and this is the first time they've ever seen that. And now it has different people, scientists, asking whether or not there might be alien life there.
It's a good question.
Who knows, right?
There's a lot. There are more and more discoveries coming. And I can remember when I first got into this, started writing about Planet X, astronomers were all just, well, that's tin hat foil nonsense, and they're weird conspiracy people. It was like totally, being disparaged is really not a lot of fun, but that's right. The way they approached it. And now all of a sudden they got Planet Nine and this other stuff, and they're finding, massive trans-Newtonian objects. And this is stuff that I've been talking about and being maligned about for years. That's the reason why, science to me, the only difference between science and religion is science is the one that says we're the only ones that have the right to be wrong because you're too stupid to figure it out on your own.
Right. Science and religion, subjects that we're not supposed to talk about, but I love getting into that with everyone.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. And that we all do. I do. And, your audience, obviously, they enjoy it.
Oh, they love it. Yeah.
So it's thinking outside the box.
It really is. There's nothing wrong with it, but for sure we do, going back to journalism and what I call yellow journalism nowadays. And of course we have all the provocateurs in the media just causing up a storm there. The real shocker though for a lot of people out there will be once they realize that we are exactly the aliens. We are the aliens, Marshall. And once we do discover, and well, we already have discovered another Earth, but once we discover that there are others out there and they find out that they look very much like us, it's going to be over.
And, what we really want, to be honest, in the work that I do and the books that I write, what I'm really hoping for is that we come through a Planet X flyby tribulation as an enlightened and ascended species. Now, our numbers are going to be horrifically whittled, but still the same, we come out of this thing as a species where our values change, and we're rejecting a lot of this blindsided doctrine, dogma, greed, acquisition, exploitation, all of this dog eat dog that we do, and all of the fear that's in our systems. I think whoever survives this coming tribulation, they're not going to be tied to that, because there will have been a winnowing process, and the wheat and the chaff will have been separated, and nobody's really going to know if they're the wheat or the chaff until things really start to happen. And then what's going to determine that, outside of, if you're not living along a coastline, or sitting on top of a fault line or on top of a fracking field or a few miles down, downwind of a nuclear plant. I mean, these things are obvious death traps.
Oh, yes.
So the ones that are going to survive all of that, I mean, the ones that are going to die that way are in denial. And I do find denial runs strongest in the more vulnerable an area is, the higher the denial is to the vulnerability. The ones that are going to survive the initial are, there's going to be this winnowing process, and it's going to be people who can, see the world in situ as it sits. And, or if you will, through the eyes of a child, they just see it as it is. They're not filtering it through dogma, doctrines, biases, ologies, isms. It is just what it is. And they're the ones that are going to have more of an advantage for survival, because they're going to see what works and they're going to see what hurts, and they're going to go with what works. And they're not going to be particular. They're not going to be clinging on to belief systems that are no longer able to adapt, evolve, and meet the challenge. They're going to abandon those systems, and they're going to go on. And the survivors are going to be pretty tough folk. They're going to be pioneering class type people. And they're going to take a very practical look at life and the world. And a lot of the things that we do now that really create grief for us, they're going to go, no, we're not going to recreate that. I could very well see that after the tribulation, they go, no, no more money, because money only has one result. It suppresses the people who have to use it in favor of the people who print it.
And I agree with that 100%. And Marshall, I do want to thank you tremendously for being a part of the program once again. That's Radio Free Earth Community Preparedness and Two-Way Radios. You could get that book at Amazon and, of course, RadioFreeEarth.org. My goodness, what a fabulous book. I do recommend everyone out there to pick it up. And Marshall, again, it's been a tremendous honor to have you on the platform. You definitely are a top talent.
Well, thank you, Michael. So are you. You're a genuine guy and you're looking for truth.
Well, of course, and that's definitely what I'd like to pursue here on the program. I want to stand for what is right and battle against what is wrong and evil.
Keep raising those flags of discontent.
No doubt, this is a spiritual battle, and people for sure forget, Marshall, and I'm glad you are on the right side.
Well, thank you. We both are.
No doubt.
I'm happy for it.
For sure, Marshall. Once again, thank you so much for being a part of the program, and we'll touch base again in the very near future, my friend.
I look forward to it, Michael.
Mahalo.
Kapla.
Good night, and God bless, my friend.
Good night.
All right, bye-bye.
L&M Radio Network offers an exciting chat room for you, the listener. Come interact with your fellow listeners and like-minded people and talk about the shows, from the paranormal to conspiracies and anything else L&M related. All you have to do is go to the lnmradionetwork.com website and click the L&M official chat page button at the top of the homepage. Then click connect and you'll be able to log in to the chat room. We're here for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and the chat room is for both Studio A and Studio B. We look forward to seeing you there.
So, you love talk radio. Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
This is Jason Bland, host of Paranormal Soup on Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network. And we're streaming as a webcast to our Facebook page, Midwest Paranormal Presents Paranormal Soup, where you have guests who will blow your mind, live ghost box sessions where you can call in to see if the spirits will talk to you, and the World Wide Web of Weird with the latest in paranormal news and evidence. We're bringing the weird every Sunday night, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern on the LNM Radio Network.
Do you own a laser printer, copier, or a fax? Well then, listen close to this announcement. Laser Technologies has been providing high-quality, frustration-free toner cartridges that are guaranteed not to harm your equipment for over 20 years. Laser Technologies will save you on your supplies with high-quality and fast delivery. Savings up to 50%. Laser Technologies supplies toner, imaging drums, developer and cartridges for most of the major brands. For a price quote, send an email to service@laser-technologies.com. Include your printer make and model for your part number. Call us at 561-792-9600. That's 561-792-9600. Laser Technologies, providing 100% of the quality at a fraction of the price. 561-792-9600.
How to know if you should reach out to a friend? Your friend might be
worried, sad,
grumpy, angry,
stressed, weird, rebellious,
anxious, antisocial,
lonely,
sleeping less,
eating more.
Look, there are a lot of things to watch out for.
But you know your friend best. So if they're not acting themselves, why not say something? Find out how you can help a friend with their mental health at seizetheawkward.org.
Won't you stay and play with me? I'm having a tea party. Such a lovely day to have a tea party. I'm having a tea party. I'm having a tea party. Won't you stay and play with me?
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it.
You don't know what.
Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Coleman and the Ad Council.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, live on the air right now with Josie Varga. What's going on, Josie?
Oh, not much. Looking forward to talking to you today.
Amazing. I agree. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. So what's going on with you, Josie? What time is it over there? 5 o'clock?
It's 5 o'clock Eastern time over here. But as far as what's going on with me, we just finished a pilot for television based on one of my books, Visits from Heaven.
Right.
Which is about my experience and what started this whole thing. You and I spoke briefly before. Typically, you know, a lot of people get into the metaphysical after having an experience of their own. And I started researching the phenomena after I had what I call a visit from heaven. Some people call it an afterlife communication, but my husband's friend who passed away in the World Trade Center attacks of 9/11 came to me in a vivid, lucid dream, Michael. Nothing like that had ever happened to me before. And I want to point out, by the way, that I never met this man, okay? I saw pictures of him, and I spoke to him on the phone. That's it. But yet, in the dream, I knew it was him. I saw myself going down this long hallway, and I come to this room on the end. There was a door on the right, and I walked into the room, and there were desks and windows everywhere. And all of a sudden, I see my husband's friend and former boss. And he looked at me, Michael, and he said, "Josie, thank you for mentioning me in your book." And what he meant by that is I had written a book called Footprints in the Sand, and I mentioned him in the epilogue of the book. He sent an inspirational email about 2 years before his own death, about the death of his father. And he talked about the importance of life. And it was so, you know, inspiring that I included it in the epilogue of the book. So in the dream, he says, "Josie, thank you for mentioning me in your book." And for reasons that I cannot explain to this day, my response to him was, "Rich, you have to prove to me that this is really you, you know?" And when I say I said that, it was all telepathic. There was no words. It was all mind-to-mind communication. And with that, he walked over to a phone, you know, like a desk. There was a desk with a flip phone on it. He picks it up, and he opens it up, and he shows me, there's a picture of him, his wife, and his son. And he said, Boston is okay. Now, I did not know what that meant. However, I knew that it was a message he wanted me to get to his wife. So the next thing I remember, it's kind of, I would describe it as going through some kind of a window, okay? And I was out in what looked like the street, and I looked out and I see him in what I would describe as the bed of a pickup truck. That's what it looked like to me. And he's standing behind his wife and son, and he looks at me and he says, you know, okay, Josie, you know, give her the message, and kind of pushes me forward, Michael. And when he did that, I woke up in a sitting position, panting and out of breath. I mean, I literally felt like something hit me in my chest. Was I scared? Absolutely. I didn't know what to make of it, you know? So I called my husband, who was at work. I told him what happened, and his response was, you know, this is ridiculous, and I'm not going to tell his family and all that. And I said, I know. This sounds crazy, but what I experienced was real, and you have to tell his wife that Boston is okay. So we compromised, and I wrote an email to my husband. He forwarded it to Richard's sister-in-law, his wife's sister, and my email basically described my dream, and he said, listen, if you think this is appropriate, please forward it to your sister. Well, Mike, when he sent that email, he told me the minute he hit send, he regretted it. You know, because he was afraid of her reaction. Right. Me, on the other hand, I was happy because I knew I did what I was supposed to do, okay? So to make a very long story short, 2 weeks later, we're on vacation, and my husband gets a message on his BlackBerry. Basically, Rich's wife had a brother in Boston. I remember, I never met him, I never met his wife, I never met his family, no one.
Yeah.
Well, she had a brother in Boston. She was considering selling her home, Michael, and moving to Boston. So, but she felt guilty because she bought the house right before her husband died. So now the message to me, you know, tell my wife Boston is okay, now it all made perfect sense. And it was such a shock, you know, because what does that mean? I mean, somebody who is deceased came to me in a vivid, lucid dream with a message for his wife, which was now validated.
Understood. And Josie, it seems like we sort of jumped ahead a little bit here. We need to hit the rewind button just slightly here. A lot to absorb. And my goodness, Josie, what a tremendous story so far. And
yeah.
I'm curious, Josie, did you ever have any sort of maybe paranormal encounter in your adolescence or anything of that nature growing up?
No. You know, about, people ask me that all the time, Michael. People say, well, you know, did you believe in the afterlife and the paranormal, you know, growing up?
Sure.
And the answer is yes. I absolutely did. I always believed in an afterlife and the concept that we don't die. I was raised Roman Catholic. You know, you go to heaven and all that. But now it's different. I mean, I would describe it as a knowing beyond knowing. And another thing is people ask me, well, have you had experiences before that? And the only thing I can say is when I was pregnant with my daughter, Erica, I had to take this test called the AFP test where they check the chromosomes. And when the results came back, right, the doctor said to me, your daughter has Down syndrome. I was devastated, Michael, devastated. And I got on my hands and knees that night and prayed to my grandmother. Well, that night, I had a vivid, lucid dream about my grandmother. I walked into her old, she lived in an old two-family house, walked into the foyer, looked up, and upstairs is like 12 stairs going to the top, and I saw my grandmother holding a baby girl on the landing, and she looked at me and she said, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. And that was the end of that dream. And the next day, I had to go for an amnio and everything, and I got a call from the doctor telling me that the baby was completely healthy. There was nothing wrong with my daughter. So that was an incredible experience, too. And that happened before my experience with my husband's friend.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. Since then, I've had a lot of experiences. But, you know, when I had the dream about my husband's friend, it wasn't like I came out of it and said, okay, you know, I'm going to go and research this and I'm going to write a book. It wasn't like that at all. At first, I was afraid because I said, oh my God, no, people are going to think I'm crazy. And I didn't know what to make of it. But deep down inside, I knew what I experienced was real. And I started to research the phenomena. And I was amazed. And I wanted to know myself, Michael, that I wasn't alone. And yes. What I found was there was people from around the world that have experienced, you know, the same thing. So that's how visits from heaven came into being.
Understood. And I'm also curious, do you think maybe something is attached to you, perhaps?
Attached to me?
Right.
Like a spirit or something?
Correct.
I don't think so. At least I don't feel like it is. I mean, I think that we all have angels with us all the time and spirit guides, but as far as something negative, no, not at all.
Understood. I ask you this because I talk to a lot of people who channel different things, and I always ask them if they are 100% certain that they are receiving a message from something positive rather than a negative entity.
I'm so glad you asked. I'm so glad you said that because
many, right, Josie, yeah, many yeah. can be deceived. That's another thing a lot of people do not realize.
Well, you know, again, it's hard for me to describe what happened to someone who has never experienced it. But when I was in the moment, there was nothing negative about that whatsoever. All I can say is I knew that I was in the presence of my husband's friend, and I knew that it was my grandmother. And another thing I would point out, and I write this in Visits from Heaven, people often say, well, how do you know it's not the devil or, you know, somebody disguising themselves as your deceased loved one?
Correct.
Well, why would, maybe you can answer this question, Michael, why would the devil or a negative entity want to bring comfort to the living? You know, I know that what I experienced was real, and I didn't feel anything negative whatsoever. And I'm an empath, by the way. So
right.
When I'm around negative people, oh my God, I feel it.
it's funny you say that because I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
So you answered that for me. Amazing. Yeah, I felt that myself hearing you just now.
Have you had any negative experiences?
Of course.
You have. Okay.
Oh yeah, many things I can't even speak of here because I don't want things to return.
Oh boy.
Yeah, this is a subject I really don't like talking about, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm always very uncomfortable and uneasy when I talk about the afterlife, which is why I rarely talk about this nowadays.
Does the afterlife, does it scare you?
Well, kind of.
I have a friend, I'm not going to say her name, but let's say, you know, I'll make up a name. Say it's Kathy.
Right.
Okay. She told me one time, she said, you know what? I'd rather know that when we die, that's it. She said, I'd rather not think that we actually live on and that there is an afterlife. And I said to her, why? She said, because then I'm going to have to pay, you know, then I know there's consequences for my actions here on Earth. And it's interesting that there are people who feel that way.
She worries about that then.
She worries about that.
Yeah, that's not my concern.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, the idea of an afterlife kind of scares her. And for somebody like me who had my experience and experienced nothing but, you know, warmth and love and that whole thing, I don't understand that. But then again, I've never had anything, you know, I never had any negative spirits come my way. So the closest I've come to that, Michael, my daughter was about 6 or 7, and she kept complaining about somebody in her room. You know, and we thought, okay, you know, it's just she's imagining things.
Bad dream. Right.
Yeah. And it got to the point where she wouldn't sleep in her room. She kept saying that the blinds were moving and things like that. So one day I was on the phone with a friend of mine who is a psychic medium. And I asked them, I said, you know what? My daughter Leah keeps complaining about someone being in her room. And he said to me, hold on a second. And when he said, hold on a second, I didn't know what he was doing. But he comes back on the phone, Michael, and he says, yeah, you do have an entity in your home, and her name is Amanda, or something that sounds like Amanda. And then he went on to describe the color of my daughter Leah's room and my daughter Erica's room. He described the inside of my home. I mean, it was unbelievable, okay? So I'm standing there while he's telling me this, and I'm really freaking out, you know? And he says to me, because Josie, she says that she's very fond of your daughter. She says, does your daughter suffer from sinus infections? And I was like, oh, my God, because my daughter would constantly get sinus infections, and I would always pop an extra pillow under her head, you know, to lift her head up for her sinuses. And this woman was telling him about this, and I'm like, oh, my God. So then he goes to me, well, I'm going to ask her to leave your home. And then he comes back on the phone. He says, Josie, oh, she said she's not ready. Well, then my maternal instincts kick in, Michael. And I'm like yelling into the phone, oh, really? Well, you tell her that she has to leave my daughter alone and all that. And you know what he said to me?
Wait,
he said, I don't have to. She's standing right next to you.
Wow.
Oh, my.
Now, that must have creeped you out.
Yeah, absolutely. So at that point, he says to me, do you have a crack in your home stuck between 8:40 and 9:40? She's showing me a crack. And here I am, very defiant and upset about this. And I'm going, no, I don't have any crack like that in my home. And he goes, okay, well, listen, Josie, he goes, I'm going to guide her to the light. You know, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. And he says, you have holy water. I said, yes. He said, get the holy water, and he's on the other end. We're both praying, and I'm sprinkling the holy water, doing whatever he said. But in my mind, Michael, to be honest with you, I'm thinking, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. So then he goes to me, okay, she's gone, okay? And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? So now my daughter complained about a spirit in her room. Now he's saying that this, you know, this entity was not there. Okay, well, do you know, from that day forward, my daughter came home from school. She did not complain about that spirit ever again. In fact, she told me that this spirit was not in her room anymore. And here's the kicker. Remember I told you about, he mentioned the crack?
Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks later, I have like a secretary, like a cabinet in my living room. And I'm cleaning the cabinet 2 weeks later, and I see an old crack that belonged to my mother and father, right? And what do you think? It was stuck between 8:45 and 9:45. My heart, Michael, my heart was like coming out of my chest. It was beating so hard, you know?
I don't blame you.
And I called him up and I told him what happened, and even he was amazed. But yeah, that was the only, but again, I don't think that she was a negative spirit. She didn't do anything, you know, bad in my home. In fact, he said that this woman was very fond of my daughter. I've never had an experience with any negative.
Anything negative. Understood. And that's very interesting. And, you know, that reminds me of a girl I knew many, many, many years ago when I was a lot younger. And she was having these weird experiences, and it freaked me out to a point where I just never talked to her again. And these things seem to be very attracted to the children, especially young girls.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they say like attracts like. Sometimes, you know, when your emotions are down, you know, whatever the case may be, they are attracted to certain people.
Right, and that's another thing I was just about to mention to you was, would you say it's for sure certain to say certain individuals are more susceptible to either attachment or maybe even possession?
Absolutely. I mean, you know what's so, well, not funny, but my friends think it's funny.
It is probably funny.
I actually am afraid of ghosts and anything, you know, anything demonic or anything like that. I can't even watch scary movies.
There we go. Yes. That is funny. That was another question I was going to ask you later on. The fact that Halloween is, well, we're not that close, but we are definitely near. And I was going to ask you, are you excited for Halloween, or are you one of those people that do not like Halloween and do not like watching, I guess, scary movies and that sort of thing.
Well, Halloween happens to be my mother's birthday, so for that reason, I love Halloween. However, I don't like the scary movies and everything associated with Halloween. You know, I can remember years ago, remember the movie The Exorcist? Did you see that one?
Oh, of course, of course.
Oh, my God. Michael, for the longest time after I saw that movie, I could not sleep.
You were traumatized.
I was traumatized.
Oh, no.
I pictured the bed moving and everything. But people don't understand that because they consider, they think about what I do associated with, you know, ghosts and demons and things like that. But I don't put the spirits of loved ones in the same category. You know, I don't, I wouldn't like it. I have a godmother on the other side, you know, if somebody referred to her as a ghost, that would really bother me. You know, my godmother is a spirit. She's now in spirit form, but I don't like to consider the spirit of loved ones ghost.
Understood.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. And that makes sense.
The spirits who are stuck here, okay, that's a different story. I mean, they say that ghosts are residual energy repeating itself. But when it comes to, you know, like what happened to me and afterlife communication and things like that, you're actually communicating with the entity. So that doesn't apply. You know, they're not just energy repeating themselves if they're able to communicate in the here and now.
Yes. And before I forget, since we sort of mentioned movies and that sort of thing, earlier you mentioned a TV pilot. Can you tell me a little bit about that? I'm very interested in hearing about that.
Well, we are, my book, Visits from Heaven, is about afterlife communication, and every story has an element of proof to it. And what I mean by that is, in my case, as I said before, I'd never met my husband's friend. I had no idea she had a brother in Boston, yet in a dream, he says Boston is okay. And that was, you know, very evidential. So I was approached to do a TV show, and we are, you know, presenting stories very much like that from around the world, but we're also interviewing experts and sometimes psychic mediums and things like that on the show. So I'm really excited about it. We did the pilot. We did the sizzle reel. So we're shopping the show around, and fingers crossed, hopefully it gets picked up.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very important for people to understand that life, you know, goes on, that there is no, you know, death, really. It really brings comfort to the bereaved, but it's so much more than that, because when you think about it, the fact that I was able to communicate with somebody who is deceased, right? What does that say? It doesn't just say that there is an afterlife, Michael. It says that we are so much more than the physical body. We have to be. You know, we're actually spiritual beings having a physical experience. And then you get into the whole idea. The big thing today is consciousness. You know, doctors and experts are studying consciousness right now.
Yeah.
Because for people to be consciously aware, let's say in the case, I also wrote a book about near-death experiences called Visits to Heaven. So in the case of NDEs, okay, how do you explain that? They're still aware, so they're still conscious after their death. There's a study, I'm sure you've heard of him, Dr. Sam Parnia.
Oh, yes.
He did a huge study in the UK at the University of Southampton. And they, I think it was over 2,000 people that participated in the study. And the results revealed that 40% of those who survived a cardiac arrest were aware during the time that they were considered clinically dead, and before their hearts were restarted or resuscitated. So that's amazing.
It really is amazing. And of course, your latest book, A Call from Heaven, I actually have it right here in my hands, a personal accounts of deathbed visits, angelic visions, and crossings to the other side. And of course, you go on and answer the questions, what happens when we die? And do we really die alone? And no. What if death is not the end, but a new beginning? These are some of the things you go over in your book. And of course, you just mentioned consciousness, and you have a little bit about that in one of the chapters in your book.
Yeah, I talk about, in the book, I talk about Evan Alexander. Dr. Evan Alexander was a neurosurgeon who had an NDE, you know. I mean, you know, as a neurosurgeon, he was trained to believe that, you know, consciousness was in the brain, and once the brain dies, that's it. However, after he had his experience, he, you know, his brain wasn't functioning, yet he was consciously, he's aware. So he comes out of his experience and he's a changed man. He no longer, he kind of thinks of the brain as a filter or as a receiver. You know, the brain doesn't, generate consciousness. It can't, because once the brain dies, then there would be no consciousness, like I said before. However, once the brain dies, once the heart stops, there is scientific proof that there is consciousness, that people are still very much aware.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's so much that we don't understand, but, you know, we all, you know, getting deeper and deeper into the topic, and people are more willing to talk about these experiences than ever before.
And from your book, is there any story that really stands out to you, Josie?
I'll tell you, there was a lot of stories in the book, but I want to tell you about the story that kind of started the book. How about I do that?
Sure.
I went for a physical with my doctor, Dr. Toro, and him and I always have conversations about, you know, my books and the work that he does. And he looks at me and he goes, "Hey, Josie, you know, are you working on any more books?" And I said to him, "Well, yeah." I said, at the time, I was writing my book, Divine Visit, which is about angelic and divine encounters. And I said to him, I said, "You know something, Dr. Toro?" I said, "These experiences are happening more and more." And he looked at me, Michael, and he said, "Oh, yeah, I know." And when he said that, I kind of like looked at him like, "What do you mean?" And he went on to describe an experience that he had that same exact week. Okay. He told me that he has a patient in the hospital and they couldn't do anything more for her. So he walked into the room. Her friends and family were there and he told her, he said, "Look, we're going to transport you to another hospital, to another facility." And she looked at him, Michael, and she said, "No." She said, "It's my time." She told him that her grandson was in the room. And her grandson, he found out, was killed in the Iraq War. So he said, while he's standing there with her family and friends, she's having a conversation with her grandson. And, you know, I said to him, I said, "Dr. Toro, do you think that she was, you know, hallucinating?" And he, you know what he said to me? He goes, "Absolutely not." He said that she was actually joking with her husband because her best friend was in the room. And she said, "Okay, you know, now that I'm gone, you know, it doesn't mean that you can date my husband," and things like that. So she was perfectly lucid.
Whoa.
She's perfectly lucid, okay? So he said she went on like this, and then all of a sudden, she turned to this unseen presence in the room. She said, "Okay, I'm ready." And he said within minutes, she passed away. Now, that happened that same week. So that's what gave me the idea, Michael, to write A Call from Heaven. And I tell you, it was really something writing this book. You know, for instance, one of the most amazing things for me in writing A Call from Heaven is I came across experiences known as peak and dying experiences. And what that is the people on their deathbed, okay,
right,
mention the presence of a deceased person of whose death they had no knowledge, okay? And I'll give you an example. There's a story that Dr. Bruce Grayson over at the University of Virginia, I had the pleasure of meeting him. He's a wonderful man. And he wrote a paper, and he mentioned a little boy named Eddie Cuomo. Eddie Cuomo had a very high fever, and his fever finally broke after like 36 hours, okay? He opens his eyes and he starts telling his parents about all these people he saw when he says he went to heaven. he mentioned his uncle Cuomo, his aunt, you know, so on and so on. But then all of a sudden, he shocks his parents and those present by saying that he had also seen his 19-year-old sister, Teresa, okay? He says that he saw his sister, and she told him, Eddie, you have to go back. Well, his father becomes very upset because his sister is very much alive and away at college. So his father says, what are you talking about? I just talked to your sister 2 days ago. She's fine. She's away at college, you know? And the little boy says, no, I saw her, and she told me it wasn't my time, and I had to go back. Well, interestingly, when the parents went home that day, there was a message on their answering machine from the school. Their sister was killed in a car accident that night, but they didn't know. So, again, how do you explain something like that?
Yeah, that's very difficult to try to rationalize.
Exactly. How do you explain something like that? Because, you know, everybody else in the room doesn't even know that this person crossed over. And yet this person on their deathbed mentions them. So, you know, really, you can't easily discredit something like that. And then you also have the cases of terminal lucidity. Terminal lucidity is all of a sudden the unexpected return of mental clarity on a person's deathbed, okay? Like in the case when they have Alzheimer's disease or, you know, something like that. There was a case in New York where this man was completely brain dead. Dr. Scott Haig, I believe his name was. The man had cancer, and it traveled to his brain, okay? It was completely unresponsive, and his brain totally shut down. Yet, minutes before he passed away, he suddenly woke up, became very coherent, was able to say goodbye to his family, and then died. But yet his brain was, the way the doctor describes it, was non-existent. It was completely dead, okay? But how does that happen? There's a doctor at the University of Vienna, Dr. Alexander Befany, who is actually studying this. I reached out to him last week because I wanted to know, you know, if he had any results yet, and he said no. But what he's doing, Michael, is he's studying people with Alzheimer's disease that have this unexpected return of mental clarity right before death, because they can't explain it, because the brain tissue, you know, there's no observable changes in the brain, in other words, okay? The brain doesn't suddenly, you know, get nerve tissues and become alive again. The brain remains exactly the way it was, yet they become lucid right before their death. And the doctors don't have any explanation for this.
Understood. And, of course, there is another story in your book called The Angel of Death, which I thought was kind of, well, I shouldn't say funny, but I've heard of this sort of thing happening before.
You mean the nurse?
Yeah.
You know, that happens. Nurses, when I wrote this book, when I was working on the book, there's a website called allnurses.com. Okay. And I joined this site because I wanted to see how, you know, common these experiences were for the nursing profession. Because obviously they're around these patients all the time. Unfortunately, they see people die all the time. And I was amazed at the stories that I found on that site. And one of the most amazing ones to me, there was a man who was constantly pressing his call button, you know, driving the nurses crazy.
Right, yes.
Okay, so when he passed away, okay, there was nobody in the room, and all of a sudden, the call button started going again. They would run into the room, there's nobody there. They'd run out of the room, it'd start again, just like it did when he was there physically, right? So one of the nurses who believed in these phenomena went into the room and called out his name, and told him, sir, you are deceased. Please go into the light. And she said right after that, it stopped. The call button didn't go off again. So that that was amazing.
That is amazing. And that's also another reason I'm also freaked out about being inside a hospital.
Yeah, I have to admit, I have thought about that myself.
Isn't that weird? Being inside a hospital?
Yeah, it is. That bothers me too. When you think about it, I mean, there are spirits around us all the time. You know, we may not see them,
but they're around
us all the time. And hopefully, thank God, they're good spirits, not negative energies.
Understood. And going back to your upbringing, you mentioned that you did grow up in a religious household under the Roman Catholic rule, I guess you could say.
Right.
And what's going on right now with the Vatican and all the people going on, or all the things going on behind the scenes out there, it hasn't been a good look for them lately.
No. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Yes, I was just going to say, how do you feel about all these tragic things that are coming to the surface that they've been there for such a long time, but now people are starting to come around and see what's going on? Are you embarrassed by what's going on with these people in great places doing these tragic things?
Absolutely. It's pathetic. I mean, the priest in my church, I wasn't there, but my neighbor told me that he actually went up and he addressed it and he started crying and said that he was disgusted by everything going on in the Catholic Church. You know, I mean, how do you tell people that they have to go to church every Sunday, for example, but yet you can sexually molest a child and that's okay?
Amazing, right?
Oh, it's disgusting.
I can't believe it.
It is disgusting. So you know what? To answer your question, yeah, I was raised Roman Catholic, but I don't believe in everything that the church teaches. Even then, I didn't. I'll give you an example. When I was a child, when I was a kid, I hated the fact that I had to go to confession. Why do I have to kneel down and tell a priest what I did? If God can hear me, why can't I just confess to God?
Correct.
Why do I have to confess to a priest? You know? So there were a lot of things about the Catholic Church that bothered me, but that's how I was raised.
Right,
when you ask me now, I mean, I would tell you that old term, spiritual, you know, but not religious. I mean, I would consider myself more spiritual than religious. You know, I understand the Catholic Church, even though they are starting to, Pope Francis is recognizing the afterlife and the ability to communicate with the deceased. But, you know, they condone psychic mediums and things like that. And I will say that you have to be very careful when you're dealing with these psychic mediums, because there are a lot of fakes out there, but there are a lot of good people out there too.
That goes around to what I was saying earlier about people trying to deceive others. You had that one lady, the psychic medium from Rhode Island, I think it was, or some TV show.
Yeah, Teresa Caputo.
She got in trouble recently, if I recall.
Well, you know, people ask me about her all the time, Michael. I've never had a reading by her, but I can tell you that, you know, no matter who I've read with, I mean, I've had, you know, I have friends that are psychic mediums, and
understood.
I've had great readings through them. But then other times I've had, you know, not so great readings. But it wasn't that they were trying to deceive me, it just was that the connection, you know, wasn't there. But however, there are, unfortunately, a lot of people out there that do deceive. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for the people that are in it for the right reason. Like, I have a friend named Lori who had a near-death experience. And after her experience, she realized that she had the ability to communicate with the other side. But she didn't believe in charging for her services. So she would read people for free. And, you know, not everybody is able to do what she did, but God bless her. She, you know, did it for free. So she was a good, genuine person.
She was just trying to help others, in other words.
Yeah, she wanted to help others. But then you have these other people out there who, you know, deceive and hurt the bereaved. And it makes it bad for those of us that are, you know, that are genuine, that are doing this for the right reason.
Understood. And there's lots of other people out there preaching and they're making millions of dollars, and I don't exactly have an issue with how someone makes their money, but when they're taking advantage of people like that, I just think that's wrong. It's not right.
Yeah, like I'm not going to say his name, but a friend of mine recently called me up and wanted to make an appointment with a psychic medium and asked me if I would go with him. And I said, sure. And he called me up and he said, oh, never mind. He charges over $1,000 a session.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God.
Well, that's really nothing compared to the pastors who are raking in millions like Kenneth Copeland and Pat Robertson. And the list goes on, and I could keep naming these people who I think they are complete hypocrites. I really personally feel that way.
I agree.
They're taking advantage of very innocent people, and that really does bother me. I don't really like that one bit.
I hate that. I mean, that's what I'm saying. So, I remember when I wrote my book, Visits from Heaven, when I wrote the first book about afterlife communication, I donated the book to the church, you know, because I thought, okay, they had a library there. Let me donate a book and maybe it would help somebody. Well, the look I got from the priest was like, oh no. but then it's okay for the priest to molest innocent children.
Good Lord.
I mean, again, you know what? I don't really focus on what the church is doing or what anybody else is doing. I focus on what I'm doing, and I'm trying to help others. That's why I do what I do. And sometimes it's hard. It really is. It's really hard.
I'm completely perturbed by the way some of these pastors have been taking advantage of their own flock. And it just goes to show that the lack of moral character is something that really does exist in America. And it shouldn't be ignored as often as it is. And again, this is all very disturbing every time I get into this sort of discussion with anyone. Because again, these are people that are just taking advantage of others. And it's completely sad.
It is. And to think that the Vatican was aware of this and ignored it.
Of that too.
I don't know.
That's what happens when the word of man crosses into things that he simply does not belong getting his opinion into at times, I think.
Right, exactly.
And that's so when things get really crazy.
Yeah, so I really don't pay much attention to, you know, what the Catholic Church thinks. You know, you can't tell me that I'm a bad person because I write about afterlife communication when these priests are doing what they do. But you know, there are three things that I consider, cause you know, I think it's very important to read these stories that other people are having. Some people will say, well, you know, that's largely anecdotal, you know?
Yes.
And yes, it is.
Sure.
But Albert Einstein once said, all knowledge of reality starts with experience and ends in it.
I can't argue with you on that. That's true.
You know, and there's a method that I talk about in my book, A Call from Heaven, the VBU method, Michael. V stands for volume. B stands for believability, and U stands for uniformity. So when you consider, okay, these experiences, how many have reported such phenomena, volume, believability, how credible are these experiences? Like in the case of A Call from Heaven, I interviewed a lot of doctors. I interviewed a lot of experts. So how credible are the people who are reporting these experiences?
Correct. That's another question I was going to ask you. How do you discern fact from fiction, Josie?
Well, you know, the interview process is very extensive. I don't just believe what I hear.
Right.
You know, you can tell pretty much if somebody's lying or not lying. So there's a lot of questions that they answer, and then I just go from there. And the other thing is, the last thing I want to mention is uniformity. How similar are the claims? Because what I often say in any of these phenomena, whether it be afterlife communication, near-death experiences, deathbed visits, or what have you, okay? They are so different, Michael, but yet they are so much alike, if that makes any sense.
It actually does.
You know, so when you consider whether something is real, consider the VBU, the volume, believability, and uniformity. And then I'm sure you've heard the quote by William James. William James was saying, it's enough to find, if you find one white crow, it's a no. In other words, if you want to dispute the fact that all crows are black, okay, it's enough to find one white crow.
It just takes one white crow. That's very true.
Yeah, one true experience. And having, since we're on the subject, what I often say too, you know, since I had my experience, right, I don't, what I experienced was real. And maybe for somebody who has never had an experience such as mine or any of these other experiences, maybe no proof will ever be enough. But for those of us that have had these experiences, Michael, we don't need any proof. You know, like Carl Sagan once said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Right.
Yeah, that's, you know, self-explanatory. But maybe what somebody else considers extraordinary, I don't consider extraordinary. But for example, since I experienced this epic communication with my husband's friend and former boss, to me, that's not so extraordinary because I experienced it. I know it's real.
I think it's extraordinary.
It is. It is extraordinary, but you look at it differently when you have the experience yourself.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, I can never, you know, like, how can I explain to someone how magnificent that was?
Oh, you really can't unless they personally experience it themselves.
Yeah, like and, words.
Right.
Like, I can write about it all I want, but words are never fully going to explain how incredible that experience was. I mean, it changed my life. I can't go back to the person I was, even if I try.
Understood, yes. And your husband, he's been very supportive of your work, I must assume.
Yeah, he has been. I mean, you know, it hasn't been easy for him. When I first had the experience and I told him about it.
Did he think you were going crazy?
Yeah, he thought I was, they were going to put me in a straitjacket.
Oh my, he's like, Josie, you're nuts. Is that what he said?
You know, he said, Josie, this is ridiculous.
Oh,
you know?
No.
But when we found out that she was considering buying, you know, a home in Boston and selling her house, that totally shocked him and me as well. So now, you know, he's experienced a lot of things through me. And although he's still very skeptical,
Sure.
He's very open-minded. You know, I think it's very important, Michael, to be open-minded, but it's important to be skeptical as well. But it's important to be an open-minded skeptic. You know what I mean?
Understood. I am myself in the same path of my perception of the afterlife and all the other things I talk about. I am very skeptical, but still very open-minded. Even with my own experiences, still very skeptical. And
it's important. Yeah.
It's a learning process is what I like to sum it up to. And of course, Josie, there's another thing you do. You're a motivational speaker as well. That's something I wasn't really aware of.
Well, I don't know if you read my bio, but I was also born with a disability. So I was born with cerebral palsy, and I grew up. I spent time in a wheelchair. I wore leg braces to learn how to walk. So I went through a lot in my life.
Oh, I read it. I wanted you to explain it, though.
Yeah, and so amazing. People would, you know, often say, how did you get from there to here? And, you know, I got here by changing the way I think. I don't think of myself as disabled. If I think of myself as disabled, then that's how everybody else is going to see me. I don't focus on that. I focus on all the positives in my life. You know, when I'm up there, it's funny, you know. If you knew me years ago, you'd never think that I would have become a motivational speaker.
That you would actually get up on stage and talk about anything, correct?
Yeah.
Amazing.
But I lose myself in the moment, and I focus on the person that I'm meant to help. But I always say, Michael, no matter what I do, whether I'm doing a radio interview, whether I'm doing a TV, you know, appearance or what have you, I'm there for someone. There has to be someone who is meant to hear me. There's someone that I'm meant to help. And that's what I focus on.
That's a very positive way of thinking about all the ways the universe really does work. And furthermore, it's incredible. You never really know where life will take you next.
Yeah, and you know what? You can't think of it that way. You have to just, you know, have faith. Like I always say, and I mean this sincerely, Michael, if I could change anything about my life, I also suffered from melanoma, so I had skin cancer. I had a lot of things go, you know, wrong in my life, per se. But if I could change anything, I would not change anything. You know why? Because if I do, that changes the person that I am.
Understood, now, yes. You overcame a lot.
My experiences, you know, made me the person that I am today. And I think that this is what gives me the ability, the strength, to help others. And for that, I'm very grateful for, and I would never change that.
Yeah, it's very noble of you. And, of course, you are someone that I feel is extremely strong and strong-minded as well, someone whose will not be broken very easily, and that's very respectable, Josie.
Thank you, Michael. I mean, I try. I think the hardest thing, believe it or not, is not the problems with my leg, but actually my disability as far as hearing. You know, sometimes it's very difficult when, you know, you're out in public or you're at a restaurant and you know, the waiter has to repeat himself three times.
Oh, so you have a bad hearing.
Yeah, I have bilateral hearing loss, but I'm fine. I mean, you and I are speaking.
Yeah,
and,
we're doing good.
I have a volume control on my phone, and, you know, I'm good to go. So, but again, I consider my disability my strength, because my disability made me who I am today, and for that, I'm grateful. I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, you're a person of character, not someone who lacks character.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
For sure, for sure. And Josie, I do want to thank you tremendously for being a part of the program. It's been extremely fun, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. And my goodness, please definitely give us a plug. Whatever you want to plug, go ahead. And of course, leave us with a final word.
Oh, well, I can say one thing. Nikola Tesla once said, "The day science begins to study non-physical phenomena, it will make more progress in one decade than in all of our previous centuries in existence." So I think that that's very important. I think by studying the non-physical, we will understand the physical. By studying the spiritual, we will understand the physical. So I hope that makes sense.
It really does.
Yeah, if anybody wants to contact me, they can do so through my website, which is josiebarger.com. I'll be happy to get back to people who, you know, reach out to me with questions.
Incredible. And, of course, the book is A Call from Heaven. Could definitely find that at Amazon.com or buy it off her website, josievarga.com. Josie, you were amazing. I can't believe time just quickly went past us just like that.
Well, listen, I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you very much for having me on. And, you know, keep in touch, okay?
Understood. We'll do it again in the near future. And my goodness, thank you so much for being a part of the program. We'll touch base in the near future.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Mahalo. Then, of course, if you are listening to this on a replay, keep in mind you can listen every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's 11 p.m. Eastern Time, live on the TuneIn Radio app. And if you enjoy this program and want to help fund the program, go to michaeldeacon.com and click the donate button. Any amount would be amazing. I'm Michael Deacon. Thank you for listening. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, good night, everybody.